Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast that introduces you to some incredible women to motivate and inspire you as we learn about their lives and their highs and lows to make us reflect and change maybe our own selves. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is Charlie Webster. Hello and welcome, Charlie. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on this very miserable rainy day. But it's nice to be here. We're nice and cozy inside, aren't we?
We definitely are. Thank you. And it's great to meet you. Now, Charlie Webster is a well-known TV presenter on Sky, ITV, ESPN, BBC and Channel 4, and has travelled the globe interviewing sporting heroes and is actively involved with Women's Aid. Now, Charlie, you have broadcast sporting stories from all over the world, but you became a focus in the news yourself when you suffered a huge health challenge at the Rio Olympics in 2016. My goodness, how did you come back from such a trauma that nearly cost you your life and being in the public eye? That's scary.
Oh my gosh, how long have we got? That question I could literally spend about two hours answering. I'm actually working on a book at the moment, so read the book. which is all about overcoming trauma and kind of the relationship between me and my mum, who played a massive part, and my brothers in pulling me through. You're one of the few people that's maybe recognised the part it played with the fact that it was all over the news and the fact that I got 24 hours to live and that I was in a coma. And the thing was, it happened so quickly. And the problem was, my family tried to get hold of other family and friends before it hit the news, and not everybody found out. So some people who were close to me found out through the newspapers, which they've told me some of their trauma, really, and how they felt. And I think it was devastating for so many of my friends. And especially because I was in Rio, they couldn't do anything. They felt helpless. They were constantly phoning and set up a WhatsApp group. But some were trying to fly out. But because it was the Olympics, the flights were, there was a shortage. Obviously finances, it was thousands and thousands of pounds to fly out. And my insurance only had two flights. So it was, who could we pick to have the two flights? And obviously my mum was flown over immediately. And I remember actually seeing my mum before I went in the coma, you know, for an hour or so. And we just looked at each other. And just before I went in the coma, my lungs were collapsing, my organs were failing, I was in horrendous amounts of pain. And my mum looked at me and she says that she just saw this little helpless child, and she started to break down, and then I started to cry, and then I started to almost shake my head and like flail my arms about, because I just didn't want her to cry, because it would have just made me break, and I just needed to be strong to try and fight through. And I suppose you asked my question of how I've come back from it. It's been so horrifically hard. I can't even describe the battle I've gone through, and both mentally and physically. I mean, this time last year I could hardly walk, and I had to relearn how to walk again. But also the psychological trauma, which I've briefly mentioned to a few people, because I think it's really important to highlight that I was in hospital for 2 months. I was told I was going to die. So the battle I went through in my brain before I went in the coma. And then when I was in the coma, I actually could hear everything, and my family and doctors thought I was brain dead, and they thought that I wasn't really there anymore. And to hear that and to hear those conversations was so distressing, but at the same time it made me fight so much, because I could hear my mum, and I just couldn't be a person that would hurt her and let her down. We're really, really close, and my mum had me as a teenager. We've been through a lot together. You know, it's really interesting, because I can really see and I experienced how people can go either way when they come back from any trauma, because I think there was part of me that just wanted to hide away. I felt so vulnerable. I didn't really feel like I knew who I was anymore. I questioned my whole identity. I had like a word disassociation problem going on, because I had hemorrhaging in the brain. So I didn't know whether I'd be able to go back into broadcast anymore. And it's my love, it's my life. So you can imagine kind of all the things that were going on in my brain. My body was really weak, but then I could feel myself, because I started to get panic attacks, and I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and I could feel myself going into this spiral of darkness, and I feel like I managed to pull myself out just in time. And so I started to give myself all these small goals and push myself and feel that actually, you know, why, because I started to question why I was alive, because all the doctors kept saying to me, oh, you shouldn't be alive. Medically, you shouldn't be alive. Your medical notes, like, you know, it's impossible, it's impossible. But that didn't make me feel very good because, you know, everybody's saying to me, oh, you should be so grateful. And it's like, well, I am really grateful. But at the same time, you know, I still feel really horrible about what happened. And I don't understand why I survived. And then I kind of turned it on his head and it was like, right, I must have a purpose. And, you know, I must be here for a reason. So that's when I started to really every day have that little bit of fight to get where I am now, to be sat next to you.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing that, because that is a heart-wrenching and difficult, you know, story to tell. And that will help others. And you do a lot for helping others. And we're going to come to that. So thank you for that. Do you think, literally, I mean, you mentioned your incredible love for health and fitness must have kept you going, you know, literally. I mean, how horrendous for you to face a low like that. And literally, I heard your interview online where you believe you, you know, saw the other side. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, 100%. One of the first things I said when I woke up and I said to my mum, you know, bearing in mind, I still could hardly talk. I'd got, you know, a ventilator in. I was like still half dead. And I said, oh, I saw death. I saw death. And I was convinced that I'd seen death. And now when I look back, I mean, you know, I don't know whether I saw death, but I was convinced in that hospital that I had a conversation with death, but I 100% know, sat down here with you, that I definitely had a conversation with somebody. Like, I have no idea what it was, but it's clear as day, so it's not like a dream. You know, sometimes you have a dream and you're like, oh, well, this kind of happened, but I can't remember the next and blah, blah, blah. Like, it wasn't like a dream. It was like it actually happened. Like, me and you are sat here talking now, or whoever's listening, you know, making a cup of tea or driving somewhere. It was literally just like that to me, as if it was a memory.
What an awful, awful thing to go through, but hopefully helping people out there to understand, you know, beyond where we are now. Goodness me. You've obviously always been passionate about competitive sport. I mean, you're a personal trainer at uni. You've worked with boxers, footballers, Olympians. You've covered everything from motorsport to superbikes, Grand Prix, boxing, darts. And any favourites? I mean, you competed and presented at the first London Triathlon yourself, didn't you? At the same time, how'd you do that and breathe?
Whose idea was that? Seriously. I thought it was a really fun idea. When the producer said to me, obviously I was presenting the triathlon for Channel 4, and the producer said, oh, we'd compete at the same time. And I was like, yeah, why not? That'd be great fun. Oh. And actually, it wasn't actually that fun, because, yeah, it was like, I remember I had handed over the mic and through to the break, and then came out of the break and I'd put my wetsuit on and then handed the microphone back and then got in the water. But I did feel the pressure because I wanted to do well. So I kind of feel like I thrashed around in the water just because I can't lie, because anybody who knows me watching this is just going to laugh. I am really, really, really competitive. I like to win, but I also like to win against myself, if that makes sense. So I like to test my limits, as you may have noticed from some of the things I've done, which is a slight issue. And my mum, really, bless her, the amount of stuff I put her through, especially last year. It was so fun. And I mean, I think you just, I'm going on about the triathlon, but my favorite sports, oh gosh, I love sport. And the reason why is I was never sporty at school. So I was never like this sporty kid. I was kind of a bit of a down and out at school. I went to quite a rough school. So I wasn't this kind of like, because I think people maybe get the impression that, you know, I played hockey and I did all this. But I just found running and it helped me so much. So I think running is my love. And I love, you know, the fact that I've presented on the Olympics, because I wanted to be an Olympian when I was younger. And I really like live sport because of what it can do. It can bring people together. It can individually empower you, but it can kind of bring a powerful unit and community. And that's why I love it so much. And that's why I like presenting live events, because the adrenaline you get, the buzz, the coming together, everyone, and I think the inspiration it can bring. I really like boxing because of the discipline. I love presenting live football and watching live football. But I think, yeah, the thing I love doing most is running.
You've done so much. You are an inspiration to a lot of people out there. My goodness. And even when you were modelling, you inspired women into sport and exercise. And I'm feeling very short and lacking in vitality next to you now. But any tips to get women into endurance sport?
Well, don't. because you don't need to, and because I think it's all relative. Like I, you mentioned that I was a personal trainer when I was at university, and I've still kind of kept up those, that education and qualification, just because I'm fascinated in the connection between the mind and body. And so I sometimes help some of my friends get into fitness or get back into it, or, you know, get into endurance stuff. Anybody who wants to get into endurance sports, I think it's an amazing thing to do. And I think you will learn so much about who you are and about your body. No matter what your age you are, you can do it. And I think there used to be this perception of only men could do endurance sports. I've done an Ironman, and I think hardly any women used to do them. But oh, it's amazing to see so many women of all ages. I think I was in Hawaii recently doing the World Championships. I was actually presenting, not competing. And there was a woman who was in her 80s doing it. Yeah, and she was so incredibly inspirational. So I think the advice I would give is that, one, 100% you can do it. There is no barrier to entry at all in endurance sports. Two, it's mainly in the mind, because anybody can do it. And as long as you train, so make sure you train, because endurance sports isn't one of those things that you can just get away with turning up to the start line, because also you put yourself at risk for injury, but you'll feel rubbish about yourself. So I think it's really important to do targets. So give yourself small goals. And I suppose it depends where you're already at, but wherever you're already at, just make sure you kind of set those small goals, achieve them, and then set another one, which will ultimately be your big goal. And believe in yourself, because I promise, I know I've said it probably about three times now, but it is for everyone. You really can do it. You just have to set your mind to it, and it's dedication, discipline. And I think it's an amazing journey to go on, and I think it will change you for the better. And I don't think you can do endurance without being a changed person.
Well, that'll set everyone up for the new year after their Christmas bulges. You help youths get into running too. And it wasn't the only sporting setback that you had in Rio in your life. You suffered abuse as a teenager. I mean, that's all over the news now with the Me Too campaigns. People are coming forward. I mean, that has inspired you to do a lot, including your new app, hasn't it, in terms of helping people cope?
Yeah, so I waived my anonymity about 3 years ago. I've done so much work in that area, and I think it's, you know, I don't need to say how hugely important it is. I think it's really important to make the distinction and understand what sexual abuse is. I think it's really amazing that everybody's talking about, you know, and saying Me Too and having the forum to speak. I think that's really important, because I think the forum wasn't there before. And I really believe that, you know, I went through that for a reason, and it, you know, if I don't try and use what happened to me to try and help, then I don't know, then there was no point in me going through it. And I think it's my duty to have that purpose. I suppose it almost helps me come to terms with it.
Unbelievable what you went through. And you've launched an app to help children cope with other issues in their lives, including mental health. I mean, that's amazing. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, it's been a project I've been working on over the past year, and a huge learning curve as well, because I've had to learn about apps and technology and coding and algorithms. I'm definitely a creative mind rather than a math sciencey one, but I feel like I've kind of cracked it. So it's called Power Me. It's free to download, and it's to help young people identify and express their emotions, but most importantly, help them self-regulate. So the child goes into the app. There's only three touches until they get the first bit of content, and they pick an emotion. And if they don't understand how they're feeling, they're all just faces, emojis. So they just pick the face that they can most relate to, because I know so many kids don't understand how they feel, or they might pick an emotion that isn't actually what's going on with them. And it gives them a 30-second video coping mechanism, which is through physical activity, through poses and imagery stories and meditation. And each exercise is specifically connected to emotions. So I think I said a little bit earlier in the podcast about how important the connection between the mind and the body is. And I think the more we really get that public, the more it's going to make a difference. I mean, when, you know, we look at Parkrun have done amazing things by diagnosing exercise for mild forms of depression. And if we look at depression and mental health, 70% of mental health problems come from childhood. So why on earth aren't we teaching young kids how to self-regulate and cope with emotions? Because we as adults, and I'm sure anybody listening, and me and you both sometimes find it hard to cope with our emotions. I certainly have some traits which, you know, I find hard to cope with, and I tend to use physical activity to help me, in yoga and breathing exercises, because actually doing a physical thing or some of the poses on the app put you in a position which change your nervous system. And that affects how the connections in the brain to how you're feeling.
Gosh, you've got so many things happening in your life. My goodness. Now, tell us one of the poses that we can do then, because I'm sure adults could benefit from this.
People might be familiar with a camel pose that immediately changes your parasympathetic nervous system to the sympathetic nervous system. So basically one from stress to one of relaxation. So it automatically does it. So you don't have to do anything. So you go onto your knees, but raised knees. So high, you know, you're on your knees, but not kind of sat on your feet, so tall knees, and then you lean backwards. So be really careful to go up and back rather than kind of crunch backwards, and then you hold, lean onto the back of your feet and tip your head up, so there's a gap between your chin and your neck so that you can breathe.
Oh, we're all going to try that later. So one of the other things that you do as an ambassador is that you raise money for the Women's Aid Federation. I mean, how many more things can you do? But you're a women's rights campaigner.
God, you make me sound like... yeah, but I'm really not. Like, I think that we can all make a difference. And I mean, I do a lot of motivational speaking, and you know, I'm very lucky to be invited to various different things. Like, I spoke on Capitol Hill this year. And I always say that... you know, yes, we're only one person, but one person can make a difference. And if we all do our little bit, then that can make a whole change. So I think all of us can do things, and I'm just trying to do, you know, my own little bit. And I think because I've been through quite a lot, I think it's my, you know, duty to as well. So yeah, I supported Women's Aid for a long time, actually. And you mentioned women's right campaigner and advocate. And yeah, I think it means the world to me, really. And you know, I think it's really important to say as well that it's human rights, because, yeah, women's rights is so, so important, especially as a woman who's come through, you know, a very male-dominated arena, which wasn't easy. But also, I think it's really important that we talk about, for example, sexual abuse as a human right issue, because it does happen to both genders, and it's our basic human right not to have our... body abused and our mind abused as well. So I think that's really important. And I've done so much for Women's Aid. I ran 250 miles ridiculously. Don't do it at home. Please don't do it. There should be a warning on that, to try and raise money for them and to get a campaign going, which got football players talking about abuse and men talking about it rather than just women. Because I think sometimes we as women kind of do, you know, women's events, which is fantastic. I don't want people to think, oh, what's she talking about? It's amazing. It really, really is. But I think it's so important that we include men in the conversation, because it's the only way that we're going to actually make a tangible change.
Gosh, I don't know how you sleep at night. You've got so much going on. And you're also campaigning for awareness and support for malaria, because you had that incredibly awful experience too.
Yeah, I think, again, I had a really rare form of malaria, and you know what, the doctors still don't know how on earth I got it, but we did kind of go off piste a little bit and go further inland. But I also had a couple of other tropical diseases, but malaria was the one thing that was really killing me, basically. And then I got invited to be a special ambassador for Malaria No More in the UK, and then I've done some work with Nothing But Nets in the US with the United Nations as well. And you know what, about 16 months ago, I wouldn't have had a clue about malaria. I wouldn't have had a clue about the effects of tropical diseases. I don't want to sound ignorant, but I wouldn't. You know, I've travelled all over the world, but again, I really wouldn't. And until it kind of took over my body and nearly killed me, and I started to kind of do some research in that area and realise that, like, a child dies every 2 minutes of malaria, and you know, tropical diseases and malaria, like, hinders economic growth. It hinders, you know, we talked about women's rights, it hinders gender equality, it hinders everything that we're trying to help in the world with poverty. You know, as humans and as humanity, we should absolutely make a difference to it, because the simple fact that children are dying and people are dying. But at the same time, if we want to actually make a difference in all these different areas, then one of of the things we're going to have to look at is tropical diseases. So I feel hugely passionate about that because I know what it did to my body.
I can't believe you've been through all this. Now, you've met and interviewed some inspiring sports leaders. Who is your favourite and what traits did they have that you thought were influential?
I'm so glad you asked me this because I was talking to my friend about this the other day. And I hope this doesn't sound arrogant in any way. Like, I've interviewed so many people and so many incredible people, and I feel so lucky to do that. But there's two that 100% stand out amongst, like, loads. One of them, it was this year, and the other one was last year. So they're both recent ones. Last year was, I don't know whether anybody knows out there, he's a hugely influential boxer, but also an advocate for so many things, Sugar Ray Leonard. The trait that he has, he's got this energy when you're in a room with him. You just want to speak to him forever, and you want to kind of just take a tiny percentage of that energy. And I think what makes him so special is he has gone through so many fights in his life. You know, he's been outspoken about depression, about drug and alcohol abuse, and he talks about his fight outside of the ring, and I think that's what makes him so special. And his passion is, like, electric. You kind of can't help but be infected by it. And the other one is Arnold Schwarzenegger, who I was lucky enough to interview only, I think, a couple of months back, and I spent 2 days with him. And, again, I just wanted to be in his company all the time because you can be the coldest heart in the world and still be inspired by him. And again, some of the stuff he says, and, you know, he arrived in Hollywood and he had his mind set on Hollywood and then being a governor, and he was a foreigner. You know, he that's what he says himself. He was from Austria with a dodgy accent and nobody was interested in him. But you know, the one trait that he had that makes him so inspiring, and that's why he's so successful, is he never, ever gave up. He literally persisted, and he got knockbacks and knockbacks. And I think that's so important. Like, anybody listening, like, oh my God, I've had a ton of knockbacks. So was Sugar Ray Leonard, and so was Arnold Schwarzenegger. But the key thing is just to never, ever give up. And know it's hard. Like, you know, I'm sat here kind of going all like this, but I have really down days too. But it's just, you know, they set a goal and they never, ever gave up until they achieved it.
Oh, and you can see you're all animated as well when you talk about that. That would have been nice, hanging out with Arnie. You've had some serious lows in your career and in your life, but can you share some of the amazing highs?
Yeah, I've had so many highs. It's crazy. I mean, you know, even interviewing Arnold Schwarzenegger this year, doing my first live show, coming back from the illness, I was so grateful. It was incredible because it made me appreciate so much the fact that, you know, I could still speak and I'm able-bodied and I have a mind, I have a brain, and it made me so grateful. I worked on the London 2012 Olympics, and, you know, when I was a teenager, I could never have even imagined. I never thought I was good enough to even be in that arena, to even mix with those kind of people. You know, I mentioned Sugar Ray Leonard, interviewing people like him. I've interviewed David Beckham. I lived in Asia. I was the first female sports presenter ever in Asia. That was a big highlight. I've got tons. You know, I lived in Madrid, which was fantastic, early days of my career. You know, I ran 250 miles for Women's Aid, and that was a huge high in, you know, in my personal life. I call myself a sporting person, but I'm not really that good, but in my sporting side and also in my career. Hopefully I'm going to have a ton more next year. I've always wanted to kind of write a book, so I'm really proud that I'm actually writing it. But it's really hard to write a book. I didn't realise how hard.
Well, you are one inspiring lady. You've talked about all sorts of proud moments of your career. So, passions. You're an endurance runner. You're even a boxer. I mean, how do you relax? Because you've got so much happening. Do you ever relax?
Yeah, that's one of my big problems. So if anybody likes to message me on social media and tell me how to relax, that would be great. I need inspiration. Yeah, come on, Bose. I need that inspiration in my life. That's one of the big problems I have. And you know, people say that sometimes your most positive is also your negative. I really believe that because I have so much energy. As you might have noticed, I'm kind of jumping off the settee talking to you. And I find it hard to relax, and I beat myself up quite a lot as well because I have so many things that I want to achieve and I really do want to, but at the same time, I'm trying to learn. And I saw a psychologist after I came out of hospital to try and work through everything. And I ended up talking about all sorts of stuff that had happened in my past as well. And one of the things she kept saying to me is self-care, 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 be kind to yourself. Because, yeah, I realized that was a big problem for me. So there's a couple of things I've found. One is I've always ran, as you know, since I was a teenager. That still helps me. I still use it in the same way as I did as a teenager. And a teenager, it helped me release my emotions, helped me feel better about myself and helped me de-stress. And it absolutely does now, even if I'd recommend it to anybody. Walking. Walking's made a huge impact as well. Ever since I came out of hospital, I used walking to get back because I couldn't run. And the final thing, which I absolutely love, is reading. Like, I am such a bookworm, it's unbelievable, and that helps me relax. But I have to read quite intense books to take my mind away from how fast and how many ridiculous, crazy kind of thoughts I have that go around my head that make me jump around and have all these ideas. So yeah, reading, I love books so much.
Oh, you're gone all sparkly eyed about that, talking about that. So do you have a mantra for how you live your life, your very busy life?
I have loads and loads of mantras. I've got a piece on my wall, which is, I can't remember it off by heart, but I love the concept that it's about kind of being a gladiator in a ring, and it's better to be the gladiator in the ring fighting and doing something worthwhile and getting blood and guts and everything, obviously not literally, than actually being the person watching the gladiators in the ring. That's kind of one of my favorite concepts. So it doesn't matter if you fail, as you know, failure leads to success because you learn from it. And so that's kind of one of my big mantras, is to learn. Like, I love knowledge, I love to learn all the time and to keep improving. And my other mantra is control the controllables. And I think, and it's really helped me in everything I do in life, you know, not just my work, but my personal life. And even, you know, we talked about endurance, even getting through endurance, because, you know, there's so many things I can't control. And I think a lot of us have problems, including myself, trying to control things because we want those things to happen. And a lot of things aren't in our control. And then I get frustrated and I get upset about them. So one thing I try and do is think what I can control and try and control those. And then, you know, it might not change the situation, but it changes your mindset and makes you feel better. So control the controllables, like simple things. I'll give you a great example is when I ran the 250 miles, I was freezing cold, the weather was miserable, and it was really making things difficult for me, and I was kind of getting agitated about it, and I kept going on about it, the weather, and but I said to myself, okay, come on, control the controllables. I can't control the weather, but I can absolutely control how I react to it. So I started to ignore the weather and smile and try and put music on and change my attitude towards it. So that's a simple, kind of silly one, but it makes it all the difference.
I don't think it's silly. I think it can work in all sorts of situations. Who's been the greatest influence in your life? I mean, you've talked a lot about your mum. She sounds like an incredible influence in your life.
Yeah, my mum. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people have played their part at different times, I suppose. My nan and granddad as well. I lived with my nan and granddad for a period when I was a teenager, and my granddad just showed me so much love and really believed in me, and I really needed that at that stage of my life. And he used to sing "The Sun He's Got His Hat On" every morning when I used to wake up, and we actually played that at his funeral. So he was a huge, he was like a father figure to me. And my mum, of course, you know, you mentioned her. She's an amazing woman because she's been through so much. I mean, you know, I've mentioned and that, like, she should be so proud because she had me as a teenager. And I think sometimes she used to get embarrassed by that. But, like, what an amazing woman to fight for me. She fought for me. And, you know, rather than having to give me up, it wasn't approved. You know, I was born in 1982, you know, and she conceived me at 16 years old. So you can imagine what the attitudes were in you know, she didn't have kind of a stable relationship. And she fought for me. She used to take me to the park and make me kind of spell things and name things. And she used to make me read. And she always, the thing that she always used to say to me is she wanted me to be everything that she wasn't. And, you know, I think when we talk about role models, a lot of the time we look at it, a role model is this kind of stereotype as somebody that you have to follow in their footsteps, but maybe not always. Maybe it can be a role model that, you know, just kind of steers you and shows you maybe mistakes they've made and the way they want you to go. And I think that was the thing she always did. She you know, wanted me to kind of really make something of myself, and she never got to travel, and she wanted me to travel, and I did, and she inspired me in so many ways like that. And she's fought through so many things. She's had a really, really tough life, but she's a really wonderful woman.
So what's your next goal?
My next goal is to get this book out. Maybe I'm a little bit scared because I want it to be really well received, but I'm so determined to get it out there, and I hope it can help so many people. So it's to finish it. I've done so much, and then I have weeks where I don't do it because of traveling and work. So my focus over Christmas is to try and get as much done as possible, to get it in a good space, because I really want it to come out next autumn. My other goal is, I'm working on this documentary at the moment, is to get that out. And I got a visa in the States last year, so people might wonder why, if they follow me on social media, I keep hopping over to the US, and it's because I'm starting to do work there. So my goal is to try and, you know, have a career in the US as well as the UK. And I know we've talked a lot about sport, but I love sport so much, and I do want to keep my hands in it. But I'm really kind of focusing on a slight change in my career, going into more factual entertainment and the entertainment arena. So there's a couple of things that you'll see me on next year, which are really, really exciting. There's one more goal, actually. I'll quickly tell you. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet, but obviously we talked about what happened to me last year when I was hospitalised in Rio. And I don't know whether we mentioned that. I actually cycled to Rio. I cycled 3,000 miles to Rio. But I would like to do something again, like a big challenge, tell the story of malaria, and almost do a 360 to show that you can come through anything and still almost like get back on the horse, is a, you know, a saying. So I think I really want to do that. Obviously, I have to make sure I'm in physical condition, because I still have a few problems going on with my organs, but I would like to do that. So that's a big goal. And I think for me, it will really help me mentally to almost close that chapter.
It's amazing. It's amazing, everything that you're doing. I think it's fantastic. So we also have some male listeners out there that we appreciate too. Do you have any insights you'd give to them as well as women on how they can be influenced? I mean, everything you've said has been amazingly influential, but anything just to leave on in terms of to be influenced?
Oh gosh, I'm so pleased that there are male listeners, because I think when I speak, I hope that I influence and hopefully inspire a tiny bit both men and women. And it's really, really important to me. I did mention that I feel like when we're talking about various different issues, it's really important that we don't isolate genders, because I think that just creates a divide, and I don't believe in it. And I think, you know, the male voice, the female voice is, you know, equally as important. I have three younger brothers, so I'm such an advocate for men as much as I am for women, because I think they go through the same, you know, confidence issues, you know, all sorts of different things, mental health. There's no divide, there's no barrier to those things. So I just think, oh gosh, I feel pressure now because I want to try and say something good. But I think one thing I always say to my brothers, and I'm the oldest of the three, so yeah, bless them, and is, you know, that they can be anything and do anything they want to be. And I really try and influence and inspire them in that way. You know, one of my middle brothers has just gone off to Australia. He got an apprenticeship out there for diving, and I kept encouraging him for like the last 2 years, go, 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 just do it, you'll love it. And he's there and he's absolutely loving it. So I think that's one thing. And also, you know, I think this applies to men and women, you know, across the board, but the one thing that, I was speaking at a big convention recently, which is all about startups, and it was all focused on money, and I just turned it on its head, and I was like, forget that. I was like, it has to be something you're passionate about. So whatever it is, just do it. It has to be, you know, what passionate to me might not be to you. So whatever you're passionate about, then follow that through, because that will just, you know, that means you're doing something worthwhile. And it also, I think, I don't know, gives you full, you know, satisfaction and makes you happy because it's something you believe in and you're passionate about and makes your eyes light up. So find that thing.
Find that thing, everyone out there. Well, thank you so much for just such a lovely chat. Is there anything else you want to add?
Oh, no, just thanks so much for having me. And yeah, it's been really wonderful talking. And if anybody wants to contact me, I'm on social media, and I try as hard as I can to message back and have that relationship with everybody who's supported me, and thank you for everybody listening who supported me, because you know, I spoke a lot about my family and what I've been through, but actually the support I've had on social media made a huge difference, not just to me, but with my family and for my family with what happened to me. And you know, I got so many incredible messages, so actually, like, I've got a massive thanks to everybody out there who also inspired me and supported me.
So thank you so much. Good luck with all your incredible achievements and charity work and future activities. We love everything that you're doing. This influential women's podcast is produced by Nikki Bannerman and Juliet Nichols. Keep listening for more podcasts and subscribe for free downloads on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes Podcasts, on Stitcher and Audioboom.